Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. About 10 minutes past the bottom of the hour, and Horse Health Today brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And Dr. Stephen Allday, of course, comes along with Horse Health Today. They're synonymous. And Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Wanted to kind of have a second conversation about the HISA Saratoga incident report. And get, you know, your perspective, you know, from a veterinary angle. And I doubt you, you know, have gone through it chapter and verse, but
no, I read all of them, Steve.
There you go. I'm glad. All right, I'm glad. I wasn't sure because it, you know, it only came out yesterday afternoon. Some thoughts about the big takeaways and what. As a veterinarian, as a racetrack practitioner, what you think the general public needs to know?
Okay, well, hold on to your hats, boys and girls. Here we go.
Oh boy! All right.
No. And here's the deal, Steve. You know, I mean, my science background and you know what I've been doing for a living. I mean, you know what I've done for a living for the last 30 plus years has been just strictly lameness. So. You know, obviously it plays pretty close to, you know, the heart for me, so to speak. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, actually the person I think that really needs to be given some credit here, and whether or not she ever has been, or people have been a little bit, and I apologize, I'm out in the wind.
That's all right.
Is Lisa Lazarus, because her powers of observation and reading that report were, you know, pretty good. If you look at it, and from my perspective, I mean, she wasn't really, you know, sold on the notions that, like, you know, what it was coming from and that it needed to be looked at. And looked at much, much closer, and that the reports were a lot less than comprehensive, in her opinion. If I'm sure you saw that as well. Yeah. So, and I'd have to agree with her. And the reason why is because I think the bigger problem is that the horses, okay, a horse is a living entity, and you have to, you know, look at it from all the angles. Not, you know, you can't look, you know, if you remember correctly, and I know you will because you've got a great memory, the first thing everybody did was when they started having breakdowns, or, you know, let's say these spikes,
yes,
in breakdowns at certain meets, what's the first thing everybody jumps on? The racetrack.
Yeah.
And you know, so you can blame it on the racetrack all you want, but, you know, there's more to it than that. So you got to put the entire picture together. You got to look at the horses. You got to look at, you know, the potential injuries, the examination reports, the lameness and or the vet logs, and the horses that they've had either previous injuries. I mean, you know, you've got a history here. You've got, you know, a lot of factors. So just picking one thing and deciding that's what it is going in, that was a mistake to begin with. And I think I pointed it out to you, but we didn't actually say it on air. So, you know, because that's always, you know, the first thing everybody does is they want to blame on the racetrack. And, you know, it ain't the racetrack, okay? There's horses that travel over that racetrack, and it's not the only input. I mean, you know, so what it cries out for is, you know, you've got, everybody needs to come together because we're all in the same boat here in the end of the day, okay? The industry's survival, I think, is, you know, it's really dependent upon everyone coming together and coming up with, you know, a combination of factors, you know, that need to be taken into place. And look, and I'm not going to sit there and tell you I have all the answers, because I don't. I just have opinions like anybody else. But the thing that I think is really important is that, you know, it's no different than if you're, an alcoholic or drug addict or a gambleaholic or whatever it is that your sin is. I think the reality is that, you know, you got to hit rock bottom, and you got to realize, hey, we got a problem here, and we're not getting to the bottom of it. We need answers, okay? And just, you know, picking the first thing on the hit list, you know, which was the racetrack, was, you know, quite literally, you know, pretty much a decision of bad faith. It just didn't, you know, you want it to be that if that's the case, and then we'll fix that up and give it, you know, another, you know, like dress it up and call it something new. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, you know, you've got to look at the entire picture,
yeah,
and put together a program that is comprehensive and looks at all the factors. And if, without doing that, you're destined to go down the same road again and again and again and again. And that's not what the problem is. Okay. Now, I have an opinion what I think part of the problem is, but, you know, it's just, you know, the track, I mean, I've dealt with tracks, and what I do is I started seeing tendencies where, you know, one thing I can tell you when I go from barn to barn is when you start seeing one high-end repeatable offense or thing that's occurring with the horses that you're looking at, there's one thing. No two horses are bred the same. No two horses are made the same. No two horses are trained the same, shod the same, all the factors. But the one thing that they all have in common is they go at the one track, they go over the same track. And when you start seeing that, that's when you have your track is your problem. When you see, you know, pretty much even across the, you know, board variety, that's not the track. That's the horse. I mean, those are individual horses that have conformation defects that would contribute, chewing, the type of training where they train, you know, like some of these guys like to see them go out there and buzz along, you know, and, you know, I mean, it's training methodology that certain individuals employ. And, I think you got to take into consideration all of the above factors when you get ready to figure out how we're going to fix this problem. And we do have a problem, because the public, you know, is not accepting the fact that we, you know, put up a screen and kill these horses, you know, and euthanize them. That's just not, that's not acceptable, because the act that basically created that was the fact that they were trained, raced, and or they broke down, and they suffered what is known as a catastrophic breakdown,
sure,
which means that they will go ahead and succumb to their injuries and be euthanized. So, you know, and the reality is, no matter how powerful or big or how many countries you're the, you know, minister of, and right on that line across the board around the planet, is that in this country, the public gets the final say. Because they, you know, they can vote this out. I mean, you know, you can be a lawyer, you can be a president, you can be whatever, and a public votes it out, it's gone. And don't believe it? Go ask the dog industry in Florida and the standard industry in Florida, for instance. Okay, they don't exist anymore. I'm sure you're aware of it.
Sure, of course.
Okay, well, you know, thoroughbreds can suffer the same fate if we do not come together and figure this thing out. And that's my point to this entire conversation.
Well, and, you know, certainly the, you know, the steady decrease in incidents per thousand,
yes,
is all, and we say this regularly, is positive. The certainly the innovations in screening and in pre-race examinations and in, you know, the list of safeguards and safety nets, you know, to keep, try to identify at-risk horses, all of that goes into this and comes out of a project like this, you know, the various task force and reports that have been produced when there's cluster of incidents. I mean, Alan, you know, we've tracked that actually with Alan Foreman since 2010. Steve, I mean, in terms of things like the corticosteroid injections, pushing that out past 30 days, you know, considering where we started, you know, how much progress there is there, the, you know, the various screening equipment that, you know, that can spot things, hot spots and micro fissures and some of the things that, you know, get us out in front of breakdowns. You know, what else is out there? What, you know, what else should we be aware of to try to reduce putting horses in the gate that are less than 100%?
Well, unfortunately, you know, I'm sure this is going to fall under tremendous disfavor. I'm going to get lots of hate mail about this, but I don't really care. So there's two people that are keenly aware if these horses are potentially, you know, and don't get me wrong, once in a blue moon, a horse will shock you and break down. And really no answer, no right. You know, it just, you know, just was one of those times. And it's, you know, it does occur where they just went out and they, you know, the combination of factors all came together. You know, just all the stars lined up and it was at the wrong time. And horse suffers a catastrophic at the steady breakdown. And, you know, but those are not as common as people think at all. I mean, most of the time, most trainers are aware of the horses that are at risk. Most of the time, most good examining veterinarians that pay attention to their clientele and their horse are aware of their risk. And I share that info with trainers.
Ooh.
Tissue, bone, whatever. And, you know, and so I think one of the problems is that there is no indemnification when this occurs. That's the problem I have with it. Okay. And I think, you know, we're all big boys and girls here, and we've been doing it a long time. Most of us have, you know, and this is the profession we chose. You know, we chose and we take an oath to do no harm and to fix these horses when it's necessary. So, you know, I don't think it would be a problem basically having a contract for both the trainer and the veterinarians examining vets. Okay, to basically take, you know, sign a contract and say, hey, I certify this horse is okay. Because I think a lot less of them would occur that from that particular procedure alone. And the reason why, Steve, is that right now, there is no indemnification and no penalty for, you know, if I sign off on a horse to go work and or race, if they burst down, boy, I made a mistake there. In life, when you make a mistake, there's got to be a price you pay for it. And trainers, the same thing. Right now, there is none. Okay. They don't get days. They don't get a penalty. They don't get anything. You know, they basically just, it didn't work out. You know, the two animals that suffer from it are both the horse. First off, he loses his life, which is a travesty and a tremendous shame. And the owner, the person that puts the bill for it, he has no repercussion and he just lives with it. He's out the money. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure most of them can afford it, but that doesn't really do much for the horse now, does it?
No. This is a slippery slope it's one of those areas that I think people understand the inference or the suggestion, but at the same time, there's plenty of horses that have gone wrong where there wasn't an outward and
I disagree totally, Steve. There's not, you're making it sound like this happens all the time. No, it's an excuse to say that it happens all the time. Off the wall, horse breaks down. Nobody could have expected. Nobody could have predicted it. Those are so far and few between. It's incredible. The ones that have had it, the veterinary profession should be ashamed of itself allowing a horse like New York Thunder to run in New York, and he's already been scratched by multiple jurisdictions for being lame.
That one was bad.
On a national TV, that's not a mishap. That's a mistake.
Yep.
Okay, and nobody paid for the mistake except for the horse and the people that owned it. Okay, so and there was no penalties, no nothing. And is that going to happen again? Probably, because no repercussions, no problem. You just go back and do it again. Because most people that do it tend to do it again. When you see breakdowns, you see them pretty, the clusters, if they do theirs. And I don't think this has ever been a statistical analysis, but I do know that in New York they do it. They can tell you who breaks down the most horses.
That's something, or this is something that the industry, I guess you bring out a topic that, has gone unaddressed.
Well, no doubt, because they never keep talking about, it's the 800-pound gorilla in the room sitting there looking at all of us. Okay. And I'm not trying to beat up trainers. I'm just saying that, hey, you're going to have to be more careful if we're going to survive. We're going to have to survive together, both the vets, trainers, owners, administration, you name it. Okay. Every state pushing back against HISA, it's here. Okay. Deal with it. So bottom line is, let's not push, let's embrace and let's figure out a way how we work together to save the industry. Cause that's essentially what's at risk here.
Well, something that has not been, widely suggested, and we'll see what kind of comment it draws, Steve.
I'm sure it's going to draw plenty, but that's fine by me. Bring it on.
All right.
Hey, I've worked every major jurisdiction in the country, and been accused of everything under the sun. But that's neither here nor there. All I do now, I'm previous to horse 25 years, so. They're going to have a hard time selling that one now, aren't they? So
let me get a follow up to another of the topics in the last week. And you and I talked about the clenbuterol positive and the potential sanction that Jeff Engelhardt had to deal with. And
yes.
Engelhardt had a very specific explanation that he asked Haiwu to consider, and they did, and they dropped the charge. And you and I broached, the whole, pre-racetrack conversation about, what's gone on by the time a horse gets to, let's say, two-year-old sales. And this really brought it into focus.
Definitely brought to light for sure. I don't know Jeff Engelhardt, but I think he was a victim here. He did the right thing. He stated his case, and, you know, hey, he was exonerated, as he should have been. But he certainly, you know, you got to give Haiza and Haiwu credit for considering, you know, what the situation was. And, you know, and what it cries out to is that the people that are buying these horses and the people selling them at, you know, the different venues for two-year-old training, Ocala in particular, you know, listen, they're going to have to step up and be part of the industry as well. And whether they like it or not, that's just how it is.
No, this was a very useful episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Very. Definitely needed.
Yeah, and we'll see if it, you know, where it goes from here.
You got it.
All Good right.
Talk to you, Steve.
Always great. Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And he's not shy and never has been, to say the least. I just heard back. I was trying to get Bo Bromigen to join us. I wanted at some point here get a discussion about last night's, I mentioned this, the Light Up for Racing initiative. And this is actually something that was, I think, started in Australia. And it's an attempt, essentially, to, you know, to offer answers to a curious public, or in some cases, an angry public, or, you know, a public that is, you know, looking to indict the industry. And it's a welcome inititive. So we'll get that done. Andy Serling.
You're interrupting. My mother and I are making a lot of headway in the puzzle right now, and you're interrupting this. You should feel a little guilty about this.
On the crossword.
What's that?
No,
we have a puzzle. It's a picture of Frida Kahlo, and it's extremely hard. And we were really having a breakthrough, and you kind of destroyed the whole thing, but that's okay.
You mean like a jigsaw? You're talking a jigsaw puzzle.
Correct.
How many pieces?
1,000. My mom's ambitious.
I still love doing jigsaw puzzles.
Well, we're doing one now. And we were really getting somewhere, and then you screwed it all up. Anyway, how are you, Steve?
I'm good. I'm very good. I do have a follow-up question, though. Does your mom, does she take the glue, the shellac, and then, like paint the thing and hold it together, or does she put it back in the box?
We will parade it for a little while, but she usually lends it to a friend after that who likes to do it.
Interesting.
We're in the equal opportunity puzzle lending business.
Right? It's like a lending library of puzzles.
I think puzzles had a huge resurgence during the pandemic, right?
Yes. Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
We've done quite a few over the last few years. It's fun. Puzzles are great. When I was a kid, I did them all the time. Those round ones that were like all red. Nowadays, I would not be that. Adventurous. That's pretty hard.
It's more fun. It's more fun having an image come together.
Listen, it's fun. It's fun. I mean, some people like puzzles. Some people don't. I love puzzles.
And you like all kinds of puzzles. I was going to say, you, right? Math, word. You know, we're
mostly word. You know, I don't play Sudoku. I should. I don't. I don't know why. I never. Probably good to have it. Probably would just waste more of my time. As opposed to my life, where I have all these things where I'm not wasting my time.
Well, that's
ever read those Cliben Cardoon books? Don't eat anything bigger than your head. And
sure.
The thing with the cat, like good stuff. There was a very one that I loved that showed a picture of a guy writing at a desk. It started. There were two pictures. The first one was a guy lying on a deserted island, and the other one was a guy working at his desk. And it said, "Wasted and useful lives."
my favorite. I had for years. I had a greeting card that I never sent to anybody. There was a series of Kleban, his cat images, right. And yeah. there was Cats. The one. That was a definition of a cat. It said something about meatloaf. The size of something about a cat and meatloaf. That pops in my head.
We always love the old Monty Python Flying Circus skit, Confuse a Cat.
I don't remember.
There's a very funny Monty Python skit, Confuse a Cat, that we liked a lot. You know, back in the day, I mean, back in the early, mid-70s, still before your time around here, the PBS station, WMHD, used to show Monty Python's Flying Circus every Sunday night for half an hour. It was great because I originally saw it. You know, they would show movies at Skidmore when I was a kid. Every Saturday night, there would be like a 7 or 8 o'clock movie for like a dollar. And the public could go, but mostly it was obviously Skidmore people. And it was in Filene before they, you know, built bigger places. Though Filene was fairly big, it seemed to be when I was a kid. Maybe it wouldn't look as big now. And we would go to the movies. And that's where I first saw And Now for Something Completely Different, which was the,
sure,
you know, compilation of the flying circuses. And that's where I first heard about Monty Python. Great stuff.
I was late to Monty Python.
My friend Tommy, I used to work in the floor. He loved it there. You know the skit with the dead parrot? You know, he's not dead, he's resting.
Yes.
You know, the whole thing. We had a book with the whole script and the thing on the floor, and we were all reading it in the trading crowd one afternoon and everybody laughing. And my friend Marianne, who traded in the crowd with us, and she's a wonderful person, but not a raised sense of humor. And we were all laughing. And she'd say, yeah, that's funny. Yeah. If you, the dead parrot one is one of the great ones.
Did you follow last week or 10 days ago, the Twitter fight between Eric Idle and John Cleese?
Yeah, I'm too busy looking at Twitter fights and racing, but I'm sure it's really no different.
It wasn't.
One of them posting anonymously.
Hey now.
What I those guys are the greatest. What was their Twitter? Were they actually fighting?
Oh no! I think the first couple of days people thought it was shtick, but it wasn't. They were.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I think John Cleese. I think he was actually tweeting under Clinky. Was his
really? So what was the fight about?
I think it had to do with something. An authorization for something, or I didn't follow it closely. I saw people reacting to it more than I followed the two of them. And then
they're both in A Fish Called Wanda, right?
Yes. I've seen just one.
Fish Called Wanda is a great movie.
It is. It's very, I know, but I've only seen it the one time. What's his name? As well, Kevin Kline.
And Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
And Cleese plays like the barrister or something. And Eric Idle's one of the crooks, right? One of the thieves.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It is fun. I went to school with somebody that I was very, very close to Jamie Lee Curtis and met her through him. That was kind of a highlight. You know, coming to
a highlight, really?
It really was. It was cool.
What's the second biggest highlight for you? You have a friend who knew somebody else who was famous?
Let me think. Along these lines, I mean, I'm not like you that sees celebrities on a daily basis. And
well, I used to see a lot of them because my neighbor was at the time. My ex neighbor years ago was sort of one. But anyway, yeah, but that's a long time ago.
Well, you're a big elbow rubber. You're at Lux.
Big elbow rubber. Correct.
Right. Yeah, the next table over. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's get a couple of insights and reactions.
That might be an over for me to have a couple of insights.
Well,
you're asking a lot. Anyway, go ahead.
Let's go to Hot Springs first, because of course Saturday.
No, let's. I just talked to a man, a great man in Hot Springs a few minutes ago, the legendary Nick Zito.
And
nice little chat. We had a nice little chat. I haven't talked to him in a while.
Nice.
Good to catch up with Nick. Love Nick. Hot Springs. I am a Timberlake fan. Whether or not that means he's a Derby horse, I'm going to guess that if Timberlake is winning grade ones going forward, I mean, obviously he could win the Arkansas Derby, though none of these Derby preps should be grade ones. I don't know what the good argument for them being, other than breeders trying to get more grade ones, he will be more proficient going shorter than longer. I think he's very good. I know he has a lot of stamina on his damn side, but he's an Into Mischief, who's a great, great sire, but not known. I mean, but, you know, they're not known until they get one. I'm not, you know, he's going to have to get a little faster, and I'm a bit of a fan, but I thought he ran very well. But, you know, that was a pretty soft bunch. Wouldn't you agree? It was a good start to his year. I think he's going to be very good. I just don't know if he's going to be a, you know, a Triple Crown type horse or more of a, you know, Alan Jerkins type horse. You know, Woody Stevens, Alan Jerkins. They'll both be running at Saratoga this year, by the way.
We talked to Brad yesterday, and I think he, you know, he was very satisfied.
He should be.
Yeah.
Tough beat for him over in Saudi. I know we're not allowed to talk about the Saudi Cup, but that horse ran super.
He did.
He and National Treasure both ran great in there.
Yes, they did.
I was some pace in that race.
They did.
They're good horses. Well, a very good matchup in the Met Mile. What do you think?
Well, and there's a few things coming out of that that'll be quite. I had Todd Fincher yesterday,
I love that horse. He's such a cool horse.
Well, and you were singing his praises going into the thing, and
he was the most likely winner of the American horses, in my opinion. You know, unfortunately, I was in love with Term to Sotogaki and Lemon Pop, and like an idiot, I made exact box with them with the first two horses and got nothing. But it's because I felt that those were two of the right horses. But of the American horses, you wanted a deep closer. It was a one-turn race featuring a strong pace. You had to bet against White Abario, who was betting him at even money. And, you know, but it's not like I really liked him. I just liked him the most of the Americans.
Fair enough. It's a very gratifying win for Venture.
That's great for them. That's awesome. And he's a cool horse, you know. And I thought his second in the Grade Two Cigar Mile was really incredible. I'll tell you something. If we get a field every year like we got for this Cigar Mile, I'll be happy it's a Grade Two. You know, maybe lowering the grade, people won't be afraid that there's going to be some one monster in there and they'll run more. So it was a really good race. I wish somebody asked my opinion about bringing Hoist the Silver over there, what chance they think he had. You know, one turn mile and eighth races with speed horses are very, very, very hard races to win if you're forward.
Well, and you bring that up, and it actually is a great juxtaposition between Hoist the Gold and Senior Buscador, because for him that's a terrific scenario for Senior Buscador.
Yeah, well, right. I think I wouldn't. Hoist the Gold shouldn't have been in the race. It was ridiculous. Sure. But forgetting about that, I hope that Wayne Cigar Mile doesn't end up hurting him in the long run. You know, like he's a really nice horse, but in the right races, I think that the interesting narrative is the difference between a race like the Pegasus and the Saudi Cup. Now, obviously, the field was stronger in the Saudi Cup, but take National Treasure and Senior Buscador. Going from a track that's a little kind to horses that are forward, and while it was a quick pace in the Pegasus, and I'm no way suggesting National Treasure wasn't a deserving winner because he ran great, but those paces will not be quite as demanding around two turns. You get a one-turn race that long straightaway down the backstretch, and you're going to have, 46 with no run-up, they were moving. And so it's going to be tougher for speed horses and more favorable for the closers. It's not a secret why those one-turn elongated, you know, those routes, mile and eight, they're going to feature faster paces than two-turn races. And that's why they're more conducive to closers than speed horses. It's not the one turn, two turn, it's the pace scenario that makes the difference. You get a two turn race that features a fast pace, it'll be helpful to closers, but it doesn't happen that often. It will happen because in the long races, the routes, this is obvious stuff. That second quarter is almost always faster than the first quarter because they're really flying. You know, they're going down a straightaway both quarters and they're really going to get moving. I mean, I'm assuming the Saudi Cup, they went 24-22 because there's no run up, right?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't
assume it's something like that. I don't know what the other fraction was.
I don't think there's charts actually. So it's.
I couldn't see the race either. So, but all those things being said, I'm still pretty confident Saudi Crown and National Treasure ran super. I was happy for Senior Buscador.
Yeah, exactly. What did you think of the 3-year-old race? Out of curiosity, with that Forever Young,
that's a race. You talk to figure makers, they will tell you off the record that was a fast race.
Yeah.
And not that much slower than the Saudi Cup. both of those horses are really good horses. I understand that Forever Young's getting more attention. He's more of a Derby type horse, theoretically. He didn't really change leads. He, you know, he was a little bit, you know, sort of amazing how much ground he made up, but don't knock Bookham Dano. He ran huge. And I think it makes you ask yourself, maybe that figure at Tampa Bay should have been 6 to 8 points higher. I don't guess outrageous to believe that if you look at some of those horses and his margin of victory. But I think it's unfortunate the connections of the winner are using this race and Dubai to go to the Derby. Because if they have a real Derby horse, which they very well may, that is not a route that you should take. And that's been proven time and time again. Those horses every year underachieve. He's a good horse. And I think Bookham Dano is a really good horse. And I hope they can get him back to the States and get him ready for, you know, if not the Pat Day Mile, certainly the Woody Stevens, because they could have a great year with him. And I hope they do. And, you know, these are a bunch of guys that, you know, this is the best horse they've ever owned. And I think they're having the time of their life. I don't know if you've had anybody on from the ownership group, but I've been emailing with one of them. And I think it's just been thrilling for them. And obviously, that was a brutal beat. But when you finish second at the end of the day, you get that check for $300,000. It mitigates the pain a little bit. And he ran, you know, I mean, yeah, you want to win. And it was an awful beat for Bookham Dano. But at the end of the day, when you walk away from it, he ran super. And, you know, all things considered, hopefully he comes back okay and resumes his year. He could be one of the best 3-year-olds in the country.
No,
and they'll keep him shorter. They get it. They understand this is not a Derby horse. And I think Derek Ryan deserves a lot of credit for that. You know, he was never getting Derby fever. And it made sense to go over there because they're not missing any major races going there. And if they can get him back, you know, Pat Day Mile optimally, but even the Woody, you know, the Woody Stevens, there's the Woody, you know, there's the Amsterdam, there's the Alan Jerkins, and then there's the Fall. They've got a very good horse on their hands.
It's clear, and it's actually nice for the Jersey Bred program too, which is trying to lure mares. Yeah, they're
I mean, just the whole thing that Richie always says: a good horse can come from anywhere, and the history of racing is littered with, you know, Open Mind was a Jersey Bred, right? Who's the other horse that was a really good New Jersey Bred? There's another horse besides Open Mind, but I mean, you know, you've got Lady Seeker was an Oklahoma Bred.
Yep.
There are great horses that come from, you know,
everywhere.
States that you don't think of it, you know, and he's one of them. He's a Buccero too.
Yes, he is.
I mean, you know, you think that Buccero and Solomini and Central Banker are at, all at McMahon right now. It's not a bad threesome, to say the least.
That's very true. Out of a Ghost Zapper mare. Well, it's funny. I had earlier today, I had Brian Cohen from Arundel with Octane, the Brethren. You know, they stand Brethren in Ocala, and he's a millionaire now, Octane, powered in part by, you know, the big Florida Sire series back when he was a 2-year-old. But that's that's his first graded stake win. He's had state.
Yeah, right. Really?
Yeah.
No, that's surprising.
He had a grade two placement, I think. And by the way, here, how'd you make the filly of Lucas's Lemon Muffin?
Who knows? You know, we had a big week. His horses were really running last week. Who knows? I mean, she'll have to get a little faster being the upper echelon, but right now she's in the conversation. It's just odd. It's hard to reconcile when you have a horse that was 0-for-5 and a maiden was only sprinting and stretched out. So I guess she wanted to go long. You know, did she run really well, or did a lot of horses just completely fail to show up? And I'm not in any way trying to knock her, but isn't that a race that it's more, you end up focusing more on the horses that didn't show up. And I think maybe you just don't look at her performance enough. Obviously she ran fine. She's going to have to improve, but it's not a bad start.
No, well, and the race came back, you know, came back.
She had 84.
84, yeah, solid enough. I mean, with the fillies, the way things are, that was okay. Let me slip in Saturday, you know, part of the cross country, which Lemon Muffin helped power. But I, Whittington Park, that was some attractive price on him winning the Haynesfield.
It was. Well, it's definitely been my top selection after the race. I would have crushed that exact after the race. I thought it was a two-horse race between the favorites. They ran third and last, and I was wrong. And I wouldn't have bet a nickel on Whittington Park. I'd pick him last time when he won. Does that count? I'm not going to red board and say I like them. I don't know how you can like them off his last race. It was not a race that expected to feature a fast pace. You ended up having three horses going and it being a much faster, contentious pace. Aneo ran great. I have no idea where that race came from. In the past, he's been, and I've liked him a lot in the past, and I've been sort of a fan, but he's been an incredibly pace-dependent horse, and suddenly he's right on top of the pace. I don't blame Dylan. Somebody moved too early. I don't know what he was supposed to do. The horse was just basically sort of running off on him, but he ran very well, and Whittington Park ran a big figure. He hasn't run in quite a while. Where it came from, I don't know. But after the race, yeah, he ran well. Before the race, I don't know how you could possibly have liked him. And that's why he was the longest shot on the board in the five-horse field.
I'm
not going to red board.
Okay. I used them in the cross-country and picked them second. I thought it was him and Dr. Ardito.
It's never about who we picked. I'm going to say that. It's never, ever about who I like and you like. And I'm not criticizing you. It's about how they ran. I think he's an impossible horse to make on paper.
That's interesting.
You obviously disagreed. Regardless, that was a race that was run in a completely different manner than would have been predictable. It's impossible to have assumed. To get a fast pace that collapses, you need a third horse in most cases.
True.
How anybody could have logically predicted that Hinejo would be the one creating a fast pace and meltdown. And frankly, if you bet Whittington Park, congratulations, you got lucky. If you bet Hinejo, you have a right to want to throw up because you bet the best horse and you got nailed at the wire at a big price. I mean, that's horse racing and that happens, but anyone that could have predicted that pace was going to melt down because Hinejo was rushing after it and blowing it up, they're a lot smarter than just about anybody I've ever met at the racetrack, except Tinky. Seriously, I'm just saying that race was a result
That's
of how it was run.
All right.
If somebody had told me that Hinejo was going to do that, I would have said Dr. Ardito was a cinch. But yeah, if you want to use Whittington Park to fill out the exacta, be my guest. But, you know, just remember something. Maker's Candy was eased. And by the way, that was the second race in a row that a phenological horse of Mike Maker's was eased. That's something you don't see that often. And Dr. Ardito was a complete and total no-show. And he's not exactly a horse that's been unreliable in his career.
Yeah.
So yeah, he won. But it took, you know, the favorite being eased and a no-show for the second choice from Chad Brown. I don't think 12-1 was a great price when you take into account those two things had to happen. But
well,
what do I know?
That's all right. I appreciate the analysis.
I think you have to take it apart and ask why did it happen. Yeah, Whittington Park ran a very good race, but there was an odd series of events in that race that would be a hard one to predict, at least to me, logically.
Yeah, all right. I get it.
What did you think? The cross country 5 must have been humongous.
3,600.
That's it? With Whittington Park and
Lemon Muffin. Yeah.
Well, it was Zeitlos who was 3-5.
Right.
There was Timberlake who was 3-5.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Should have been 1-5. And who was the other one?
Octane.
What? He made like $15, right?
Maybe 13. Yeah, 12, 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the, so you got like a 30, you have a $27, and what did Lemon, what did she pay?
Muffin paid, what did Muffin pay? I got it right here.
Muffin.
I had a girlfriend I called
if
Muffin.
If it was a colt, would you call it Muffin?
Her name is Muffin.
I'm just pointing it out. It's Lemon Muffin, right? Or something.
It's Lemon Muffin. I had a girlfriend I named, like I nicknamed Muffin. I called Muffin.
There's probably been people who have called you Muffin over the years.
Paid $58.20. I was on the second horse. I was
in
nauseous.
In a $60 horse, in a 12-1 shot. So you got about 900 there, roughly. 900. Yeah. What did, let me look at this. What did Octane pay?
Octane, I was a little under 6-1. Actually, I'll tell you what. Time out.
$13 even.
Hold on. I'm wrong. The $3,500 was on Friday. Saturday was $6,400.
Okay, so once again, we'll go to 900. We'll go to 545. We'll say 5,000. But then 5,000, and then you got a 3-5, so it's 8,000, and a 3-5, but a 4-5. So you're about 13,000. Oh, so okay. So yeah, so pay twice the parlay. Okay. It was, it really was for a lot of cases a pick three, and you had to get those horses on there. Okay, fair enough. There you go, by the way. 2 3-5s that paid $6,400. And I'm sure there are people who listen to somebody who gives bad information on Twitter that missed it because they didn't like Timberlake.
Yeah.
They threw him out.
Well framed.
Always good to leave those obvious favorites out. Always good to leave them out at pick fives. That's, you know, and they can say, hey, I saved $24 on my ticket and ignore that they cost themselves $6,400.
Let me look ahead a little bit. Did you?
I'm not wrong, by the way.
You're not wrong. Let me. But I'm sure we'll be told that we're wrong. Some Fountain of Youth thoughts.
Heading down?
Yes, I leave today.
Oh, the trip begins.
Yes.
Well, I'm excited about Deterministic and the Gotham in them. Overflow Field to Gotham.
Gotham's out of control.
You want to talk about a non-Naira track? Well, they have drawn the Fountain of Youth. We haven't drawn yet. But it's going to be a great race to Gotham.
14 of them.
I'm predicting that I'm not going to have as good opinion this year as last year. That's my biggest opinion. So the Fountain of Youth, it's the 17th of 43 races. They're starting at 10 in the morning and going till 3 in the morning. Listen, we have long days too, so if I'm making fun of them, I can make fun of us too. So I'm guessing Speakeasy is probably running Friday, and maybe this is sort of insurance in case something happens to locked.
That's a typical Todd MO.
A lot of people, they're smart, do that. It's not just Todd. Yeah. It makes sense. I really think it's silly they're running Victory Avenue, but what do I know? We'll see how Dornuck does in his first start. He's very good. And Locked, I mean, has had some hiccups on the road, but he's very good. I'll watch it like I watch them all.
You know, there's a... I'll bring it up with you, actually, because I don't think we've talked about it.
You like Ligon Bro? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's all right. The Lasix on, Lasix off situation.
Well, I guess the people that say Lasix off matters will say Maker's Candy was Lasix off. He had run well in the past without Lasix, so I didn't think it was an issue. I ignore it because for the most part it doesn't seem to be relevant, but I would imagine that there are cases where it could be horse-specific and there will be some horses, but I think I'd like to think that the caretakers of these horses are smart enough to know how to get them to race where the Lasix off won't be a factor, but I don't pay a lot of attention to it, but I can't knock somebody that does. But let's remember something. Locked has never run on Lasix. Dornock has never run on Lasix. So the first and second choices in here have never run on Lasix, right?
Yep.
So I would theoretically think it rates to be less of a factor in this race than most. But hey, you know, logic, it's vastly, vastly overrated.
it's coming up with horses like a Victory Avenue, like Speakeasy, the Safi Joseph, Peter Blum, Merritt is another one that, ran an allowance race and now, you know, comes off. So,
I don't really think anybody's considering Merritt a contender in this race. And if he wins in the air, it's not very good for Dornock or Locke going forward to the Derby, huh?
Yeah, you know, the horse of Rowan Crichton, that was a good effort last time. That real macho.
He got a perfect trip, but he did improve a lot. I met Rowan in Jamaica. Very nice man.
Look at
he
you.
He won the race. I saw him in the hotel the night before.
Look at you.
Yeah, I'm like, you know.
Yeah, man.
I see Katie Holmes at dinner, and I see Rowan Crichton in Jamaica. I'm everywhere.
You're the greatest. What about the Devona Dale? I saw that you were warning people that...
I think that... I was saying to the Devona Dale was that I thought that Todd's horse should be favored in there. Leslie's Rose. I have some reservations about Leslie's Rose, who I think is talented, but she's also had two very, very soft trips in her races. But she has run faster figures, so I think she should be favored in here. You know, but she is going to have to deal with the speed of Fiona's Magic, right? Who's very quick. and she drew inside of her, so that's not advantageous. I like this FYI, but she's going to have to get a little faster, but she's supposed to. She's got a pretty good trainer, too.
It's a fun race. There's also Ian Wilkes with Into Champagne. Got the nice outside stalking draw. Shug's got
who better get a little faster, no?
Yeah, that has to. Yeah, I tell you, the horse of Bo Yates, Fiona's Magic, she's no doorknob.
What's the qualification of a doorknob?
You know, something that just is a ordinary and like a household item. I think she's okay.
Okay.
And he doesn't.
You love those St. Patrick's days.
I like St. Patrick's Day. What's wrong with St.
I got to look up who he was.
He's American Pharaoh's brother.
Oh, does he know?
He's what's that thing that you and Nick say that? Nick Tamaro say that all the time. The brother that doesn't that American Pharaoh doesn't tell anybody.
He was a turf sprinter. He started as a dirt sprinter in California. He ran an 81 and a 73, and then he went over to Aidan O'Brien and ran in turf sprints. He was second in a group three at NOS. But then he ran at Navin. Is Navin the one that Andy Byer says if they run at Navin, they can never win a good race at NOS? I think it's Navin.
What famous Steve Martin character? Right?
I think that my roommate, Dave, it wasn't Navin. It was Amit. It was his real first name. Wonderful guy, by the way. Steve Martin has a character named Navin.
Isn't his name Navin Johnson?
That's possible. You know, I've only seen The Jerk maybe once.
I think I've only seen it one. Maybe a second time.
Another celebrity I see a lot. So close, but not that close. Not Steve Martin. Navin sounds right. Anyway. Who's your next guest?
It was going to be Bo
Gagliano coming back.
Not today. Although I do see certain people bringing a guest back, like.
All right. So who's your next guest?
It's supposed to be Bromagin, but he's got to table it until tomorrow. He's in a meeting.
Remind me. Who's his good horse?
Bo's? He's got all those horses, the BBN racing he's involved with, and with Ashbrook, and he's got his hands on a lot of good horses over the years. There was just one, the stake horse recently. For goodness sakes. Well, the BBN horses are his.
He's the owner or trainer, Steve. I'm sorry.
He's the bloodstock agent.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm not – I don't really know bloodstock agents like you. I'm not as important as you.
Well, I don't see celebrities like you, so we all have trade-offs. And
you live in Greenwich. You didn't even know that Maurice Sendak lived there.
He lived in Cambridge, number one.
Whatever.
So
he was local.
Local, that's far away. Local, it's 15 minutes away. That's not Greenwich.
Where the wild things are. It's happening right in your backyard. You didn't even know.
You know, it's very funny, actually, you mentioned that, because Tina and I, we were getting, before we left to see the kids last weekend,
so you had something to do with it.
Well, we were looking at books, and we wanted to, we bring the kids are crazy for books.
How about The Night Kitchen? That's a good Maurice Sendak.
All right, now you're talking.
I had a coloring book in The Night Kitchen when I was a kid.
I tried to have Tina. I said, let's get Sendak. It's right there, and she said, no. Wait till they get older. So
what, you get Vonnegut?
Which one?
12 Hours 5. Good bedtime reading for the kids. Salvador.
Mother Night.
Right. I always like God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater.
I've read. You know, it's funny that. Do you go back and read? You're a much more avid reader than me.
I rarely read books twice.
I was going to say you don't go back and read twice.
I'll give you a great book that nobody's read.
Go ahead.
The Duke of Deception.
Is this the second time you brought this up?
Maybe. Most people are familiar with This Boy's Life, which is Jeffrey Wolfe's book about living with his mother and the stepfathers, the movie with De Niro and, and Ellen Barkin. And DiCaprio plays the kid.
Right.
But the other brother lived with the father. Was Tobias wrote This Boy's Life, and Jeffrey, I think, wrote The Duke of Deception. And the Duke is the father. And he's sort of fabricated his entire existence, you know, his whole story. Hmm. The Duke of Deception is a great, great book.
Well,
really, that was Jeffrey. I think Tobias Wolfe wrote.
He did.
This Boy's Life. Yeah. But Jeffrey wrote The Duke of Deception, Jeffrey with a G. Great book.
Well, our listenership loves
the
books.
So I will say that while I've said a lot of idiotic BS on your show, I will leave it with one good piece of advice. The rest of it's probably a lot of useless dribble.
You know, you can hang around if you want. I don't have a ready.
I'm going to go work on the puzzle with Mom, and I got an important call from Pat McKenna while I was on with you, who seems to call me all the time while I'm on with you.
That's like he forgets.
The respect that you deserve.
All right. Say hello to Pat. He was we saw him. The ticket sales were crazy. They were over in 90 minutes.
And it's all because of Pat.
It is.
Well, I read on Twitter that apparently he's responsible for everything at Naira. The guy's the director of communications, and he's been in charge of everything. I'm waiting for somebody to get something right on Twitter. I'll let you know when it happens.
I love it.
See you later.
Andy, I appreciate it. Have fun with your mom and Andy Serling, everybody. So great. I want to thank my man, King Hackley, who he came up with a great historic New Jersey bread. Regret. Yeah, regret. A New Jersey bread. I countered with Irish War Cry. My favorite New Jersey bread. That was a lot of fun with Mrs. De Tomaso and her sister Hope Jones. That was some nice run. You know, that's somebody we haven't talked to in ages. Graham Motion is overdue for a visit. Graham's like, you know what? Graham's seems to be a little slow out of the box this season. He's started 47 horses so far this year with 4 wins, 6 seconds, and 5 thirds. Just had an allowance win, Tampa the other day. Heavenly Appointed. All right, and I have not seen him showing a couple of stake spots, a couple of turf stakes, particularly at Tampa. I'm sure Tampa Bay Derby Day, undoubtedly, Graham will turn up. So we'll reach him. Yeah, he hasn't had, he started Edgartown in the Kitten's Joy. So maybe this weekend too. Actually, let me see. I got it right here. Hold on. Let's take a look. H. Graham. Yep. H. Graham has got, he's in 4 races on Saturday at Gulfstream. He's got a maiden in the first, J. Hirsch, or Jersch, depending, New York bred, who went to find turf for the season, for the winter. Then he's involved in that Tapita money handicap, the 4th. He's got Regal Kingdom in there. Seasonal debut, 4-year-old Animal Kingdom, gelding. He's in the second level allowance, 5th. This going 7.5 on the grass. English B, who I love. In fact, speaking of children, the grandchildren and books, I ordered a couple of books that Tina ended up, we didn't bring them. And I brought this up with Graham when this horse, how old is he now? 8 years old. Oh my God. He's 8 years old already. Do you remember this? When that horse came around, maybe it was another Ant and Bee. You know the books, the Ant and Bee books, they're tiny, they're little tiny things. They're like 4 inches by 6 inches. And there's a whole series of them. And I don't know why we had them. I'm going to bet my father's mother, my grandmother, got one or two of them for us when we were kids. And they're English, and they helped. I think they were post-war, 50s era books to help kids learn how to read. Ant and Bee. And they're cartoonish, they're cartoons. They're cartoon drawn. And the one that I remembered, the reason I wanted to get it for the kids was Ant and Bee Around the World, I think is the title. And it's because one of them loses an umbrella. He's got an umbrella with his name engraved on the handle. And they go all over the world trying to find Bee's lost umbrella. And it, for whatever reason, it's stuck in my head for years. And of course, I didn't have any children of my own. Thanks to the three women that didn't want to marry me. Then we found one that did. But anyway, I've always remembered it. So the opportunity to get Ant and Bee books for the grandkids happened. But anyway, whenever I see English Bee, that may have reignited my memory of the books. So Graham's got English Bee, and then he's in the Honey Fox. He's got Miss Carol Ann in the Honey Fox as well. Drew the Rail, and the Honey Fox happens to be one of the two races we're going to do Thursday with Crafty. All right, with Jeff Franklin. The late double, actually. The Honey Fox and the Fountain. All right? Honey Fox is good. It's a very good... The card is a lot of fun. Should be just as much fun as Oaklawn was, and had a good day. It could not catch a big multi, but had some little multis and had a lot of individual race success. And I'll tell you, I did something. I'm going to have to do it again this week, actually, because Seth Merrow, who we'll talk to tomorrow, and actually, I wonder when Seth is going down. Seth and I are doing, like we did last year. Was that for Florida Derby or was that for Fountain? Last year, I was down in Florida, and Seth asked me if I wanted to do the pre-show on Capital OTV. So it'll be a little loose on the lead, loose in Broward County. should be funny. We really enjoyed it. I don't get to do that. They other than Capital OTB, nobody seems to want me on television. I did the Players Show, the Breeders' Cup Players Show, which was tremendous fun. I was on with Scott Hazleton and Mig. It's one of the reasons I have so much fun, you know, reuniting them when the occasions arise. And of course, they were paired up on HRTV for a long time. But yeah, I did. That was fun. We did the Distaff 1 year at Santa Anita, and I did. I think twice. Yeah, I'm not in great demand on television sources, but Capital OTB, thanks to them for being gracious and allowing me on television. We love it. I just got something from Southwest scaring me. Is the flight late? No, it's not. It's fine. All right. Good. 3 o'clock flight. to South Florida, back to South Florida for a second time. The fountain has always been my favorite, actually, of the sequence. For whatever reason, and it might go back. You know what? It probably goes back to, you know, the greatest fountain of youth, at least for those of us that, you know, had the opportunity. Read the footnotes. Just unbelievable. And oh my gosh, Dr. Alday's pal, Billy Caesar, 2nd of June. If you've never seen, and I'm sure it's on, I imagine it's on, it's got to be on YouTube, right? I would think. Let's take a look at this. If you've never seen it, that was about as good a race as I can remember that I've ever seen. And 2004. 2004, and read the footnotes, 2nd of June, basically, you know, easily the length of the stretch, where they came together after three quarters. They were chasing Frisky Spider. Oh my God, there's a horse that time forgot. Silver Wagon was in this race, El Prado Rob, Sir Oscar, Broadway View, Frisky Spider, and Hope for the Roses. Hope for the Roses was Barry Rose. That I can tell you right away. He was only 75-1. This race knocked them both sideways. I mean, it was a knockdown drag out, and I think maybe that race is probably why I always that. I became a huge fan of the Fountain of Youth. And in fact, here's some of the, well, and High Fly the next year, actually, which might've been the first start that he made with Nick, because of course, Bill White had started High Fly for Mrs. Weber. But High Fly won it the next year. I was there for that. There are some great Scat Daddy. There were some great winners of this. First Samurai, Scat Daddy, Cool Coal Man, Quality Road, Escondorea, Sold That, Union Rags, Orb, Wildcat Red, It's a Knockout, Mohaman, Gunavera, Promises Fulfilled, Code of Honor, Ette Indienne. I had completely forgotten him. How about that for Patrick? Greatest Honor. For Suge, and then Simplification, who was my Derby horse, and then Forte last year. A pretty, pretty good list. And if you go before that, not a bad list before. The Fountain of Youth's always been great. It's always, always, always been a great harbinger of talent. Trust in Luck, Booklet, Song and a Prayer, High Yield, Vicar, Lil's Lad, Pulpit. Jesus. Built for Pleasure. That's one I wouldn't have come up with right away. Thunder Gulch, De Hare. Unbelievable. Good, good, good race. The Fountain. Spectacular Bid was a Fountain winner. Proud Truth. Late John Veitch with George E.V. Yeah, there's one I don't remember. I don't the 93. I wasn't going to Florida. Going down to Florida, you know, becomes part of. And everybody's got a certain era. It's funny, you know, certain Calder / Hialeah / Gulfstream winters, and you know, depending on the era, the people either started to go or, you know, I mean, for me, it only started when my parents, you know, got the place in Boynton. And then actually it was 2005 where the thing started with the show. Yep. changed. You want to talk about a life-changing event? Yeah. Me calling JJ and John and saying, you know, I'm going to be in Florida. I'd been on the show, I think, a week or 2 weeks, like two Fridays. And I said, you know, I'm coming down for Thanksgiving. I'd love to come meet you guys and maybe I could do the show with the studio. That was that. Life, you know, my life took an exit ramp from that point, November of 05. Anyway, as you can tell, I'm just sort of free associating here, more or less. So I got, what do we got? We got 7-8 minutes. All right. Here, I can give you those other, let me do this so I don't have to take it with me to Florida today. I have Whittington Park we just talked about, although I did think about maybe calling Marshall. The two stakes from Laurel that we talked about with Callie, the Miraclewood, that speediness and was too good. The Jamie Ness wired that group at 4-5, and everybody was chasing. This is a great notion, gelding, for Jaeger and Morris Kernan. And this is a nice horse. That's his fifth win in 9 starts. And 2-for-2 to start the year. Maryland bred and Maryland million eligible. Speediness. Got bet and got it, got the money. Point Doom was second, actually, the Kieran McGee for Sheffield Stable, 4-1. The girls' race, the Wide Country, and this was Brandon McFarlane, 3-2, slight favorite over Ronan Goddess. And we talked about those two. And Miss Harriet also pretty much controlled it from the front end. She's a Blofeld filly. And that's her third win in 4 tries. She's 2-for-2 to start the year. This was the one that Dan Illman got in her, the one at 60-1, and won the debut in the Maryland in the Lassie. We talked about the Gulfstream Sprint, so I don't have to retain that. That horse that I was saving for in case we talked to Chad. Oh, I was supposed to call Chad back this week. Last week he was on vacation with the girls. All right, I'll save that. Santa Anita we did with John, and I didn't mention actually in those conversations with John. I did not mention the there was a maiden race that looked like it may be productive. I've not gone back to look at the fig, but Mandela, who's just hitting on all cylinders, Yellow Brick, which is a cute name, Quality Road Colt for the Basses. Yellow Brick, 4-year-old, won that maiden race. This had some horses that, you know, were kind of late getting their career started. So keep an eye on that group. That group's all right. And we talked about Linda's Gift with about how nice she is. I think. There we go. Gulfstream, Santa Anita. And, yeah, that I don't need. All right. Not in bad shape here. Louisiana I gave you. I gave you New York. I gave you Tampa. I even gave you Fauner. There we go. Free and clear. I didn't mention this, actually. And I'm sure this will, because, you know, the outrage, the outrage machine on Twitter, gotta be angry at something. I'm sure that I didn't go looking for it. But in the wishing well, Richard Baltus back training, and Baltus with Ag Bullet gets Gets his first stake win on the return. So, Umberto Rispoli aboard Ag Bullet that came on Sunday. And by the way, where's John Lindau? You got 2 minutes to let me know who won the the jockey game against the Holy Angels. Ag Bullet is a twirly candy filly for Joey Tran and Calvin Wynn. Was a little under 4-1 and beat Graceland Gray, the nice the Graveslunds horse of Peter Earn. So, all right, save that. You got, and we gave you, I think we got all of, there. You know, there surprisingly, I went looking after Monday, after Sunday, we had the busy day going downstate, but on the way back, I was looking at the other races, the non-stake action from Oaklawn, and the week before, I had given everybody the numbers, the figs from the maiden races, and obviously we just talked to, we talked earlier to Whit Beckman. There was not as many flashy, there were solid performances at Oaklawn, but there weren't necessarily, next step into state company type, catch your eye. Seize the Gray, though, that win for Lucas, you would think, 82 buyer in there against that group, you would think that he might get a glance at the Arkansas Derby, a horse that should continue to, enjoy route of ground. Is an Arrogate, and this was my racehorse, without partners, actually, just my racehorse alone. Seize the Gray, good three-year-old debut in here. So that was I thought, fairly notable. Excitable Boy got an 80 for Mac Robertson. And the fillies that Motown Dynamic, Larry Connor, owns. Another Motown. Motown had a good weekend. And 78 buyer breaking the maiden, going six. The Hartman for the Lieblongs, favorite outlaw, worked out the trip and managed to get past a couple of the prices. 89 buyer. Yeah, it just there were some nice efforts, but there wasn't, 76 buyer for Midsummer March. That was the McPeak, the one McPeak starter we didn't get a chance to talk about. I'll tell you who was good. I mean, obviously, it's an Arkansas bred group, but that horse of Lindsay Schultz's that romped in the Arkansas maiden race, Hall and Ice, 72 buyer. That's a big nice number for Arky bred. So there it is. I can put away all the stuff from the past weekend as we shift into gear, into travel mode, coming to you from Gulfstream tomorrow. We'll be in the Horseman's Lounge the next five shows, and then Tampa, and then Ocala and Vegas, and on and on and on. Thanks to Alan Foreman for walking through the HISA Saratoga report. Brian Cohen, Arundel, speaking of Ocala. Whit Beckman, that was fun. Andy, of course, and Dr. Stephen Alday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Reborn and Luberson. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you from Gulfstream Park in the morning.
Sirius XM Radio.
PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins.